Like a windsock, the level and direction of Defense Department contract spending tells a lot about the policy climate. It looks like the winds are shifting, meaning after years of steady declines, spending on contracts by the armed forces and defense agencies are heading back up. Joining me with more, Andrew Hunter, director of the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Mr. Hunter, good to have you on.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
This is an encyclopedic study you have done of defense spending trends. So why don't we start with the big one? Where is it headed in 2017, 18, 19, 20?
Well, the good news is that it's headed back up. And this comes after a multi-year decline, really from 2009 to 2015. It was headed down. So that's really 7 years of decline. Combined effect of the drawdown of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, although they didn't obviously draw down to nothing because they're both still ongoing at low levels, and the Budget Control Act and sequestration, which kicked in and caused funding declines in 2011 and steeply in 2013. But the direction finally, 2016, has turned up. And, you know, one of the interesting dynamics of the drawdown has been that contract spending declined much more than the budget declined, and in fact lost about 10% of its share, if you can think of it in terms of market share, of DoD spending. So much more was being spent inside the department, and less money was coming out the doors. The interesting thing about 2016 is, although the budget did recover somewhat modestly, contract spending recovered over 7%, which is a pretty significant uptick in for a single year move. So just as contract spending declined at a faster pace than the budget did, at least in this initial year of recovery, it's recovering faster than the budget overall is recovering. And what'll be interesting to see is if that trend continues.
Well, we tend to think of contract spending as strictly weapons and ordnance and that kind of thing. But really, healthcare is a gigantic piece of contract spending. And so what's the dynamic within contract spending that we're really seeing a difference?
That's a great question, and you're right. We think of the big high-profile weapon systems. They're probably a quarter or less of the contract spending. And there's things like healthcare, fuel, and other services that drive the bulk of the spending, actually. What was interesting with this recovery is, in fact, it is coming mostly in what we call products, which includes weapon systems, also includes things like spare parts and smaller level items, consumables that the government, especially the Department of Defense, buys a lot of. So it's happening in products, which includes weapon systems. And that's logical. If you look at what happened in the budget, a lot of the budget increase that the department received came when Congress plussed up, you know, helicopter accounts and other aircraft accounts. So Congress poured a lot of procurement funding into the department. That's where most of their increase came from. And we see that in the contract spending reflected by the fact that the recovery is happening primarily in those accounts, in the products and the weapon systems.
And this all happened even in spite of the fact that the Budget Control Act was still not repealed and sequestration
Correct.
In theory is still there.
It is still there. The budget caps are still in place. We've reached the point of the curve. When the budget caps first kicked in, it was a huge drop from where defense spending had been. But the interesting thing about the budget caps is they had a small inflation factor built in. So when you consider the fact that we reached the point in the curve where the budget caps are actually themselves starting to increase slowly, plus the fact that Congress threw some extra money on top, mostly for new weapon systems, as I indicated, that's where you're starting to see this increase kick in. And, of course, one of the very significant questions still open is, what is the vector going to be going forward? Because the caps themselves are starting to go up, it's pretty clear that we're going to have growth. And although it may not be at the same pace as the 7% that we saw in 2016, there's going to be growth. But with the administration's talking about a significant buildup, but with the budget caps still in place, it's not clear that buildup is really going to happen.
We're speaking with Andrew Hunter, director of the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. So without a buildup, then, as we understand it from the Reagan years terminology, then it will rise just organically because of what?
Well, it's going to rise because of inflation, if nothing else, and because cost of operations tend to rise over time and have been for quite a while. What's going to be interesting is if the increase in the budget doesn't happen, if the budget caps remain in place and we're either funding at budget cap levels or maybe funding at some small increment above the budget cap that Congress finds a way to add in some extra, but we're still tied to those budget cap levels in some significant way, the competition for resources within the various aspects of the department's operations is going to be incredibly intense. And so, you know, with the Trump administration's plan to increase force structure for the Army and the Marine Corps and increase the size of the Navy fleet, that's an expensive undertaking. And, you know, even the increases that the Obama administration sought for defense were based upon the idea of a smaller army than the army that we're going to have this year. So that's going to compete for resources, and it's going to essentially be a must-pay bill. Once you decide to keep people in the military, their pay is a must-pay bill, and you're going to pay it. And so that leaves less funding available for things like modernization that are easier to defer.
Plus, it has a very long life cycle cost because people have pension benefits and health care benefits for the rest of their lives in some cases.
That's true, and that's one of the reasons why the personnel share of the budget has gone up so much in recent years. They've converted over in the 2000s to accrual accounting. So a lot of those retirement costs now are built into the personnel accounts, and they accumulate every year. There's money set aside for that.
Now, on the acquisition of things, getting back to that, you have written that the Better Buying Power initiative that took place in the last administration under Frank Kendall has really had some measurable effects.
That's right. We tried to use our data set, which is the Federal Procurement Data System data on contract spending, to see if we could confirm what Secretary Kendall had been reporting in his own report on the performance of the Defense Acquisition System. That report utilized EVMS data, Earned Value Management System data, which is proprietary data the department has that we don't have access to here at CSIS. But interestingly enough, when we ran the numbers using contract data, we reached a similar conclusion, which is that starting in 2012 and increasingly over the period to 2016 when our data set ends, you do see that there is a reduction in the number of terminations, particularly when you look at long-term contracts, high-value long-term contracts, which are your weapon systems contracts, among others, and also that the cost growth, the amount of times where they had to increase the contract ceiling value because the contracts had gone over cost, over budget, those also reduced. And the biggest effect was on the what I call the outliers. In other words, the contracts that really blew it, the ones that experienced explosive cost growth. There's a dramatic reduction in those contracts in particular. And it's really those outliers that tend to drive the headline number of cost growth in the acquisition system. That is always so negative.
Do you have a for instance for one of those?
Well, yeah, it's the dog that didn't bark. So, you know, we just don't see really any contracts that are experiencing like more than 20% cost growth in recent years. Now, obviously, there are some infamous ones or famous ones of the past. The F-35, you know, comes to mind and others. You know, perhaps one example I could point to where we did have some cost growth, obviously, was on the CH-53 K program for the Marine Corps, the new Super Stallion helicopter, that has just been approved to enter into full rate production, and it's showing about 20% cost growth total for over the life of the program. And that's obviously not great, but when you compare that to some of the programs that have had 100% cost growth, it's not all that bad in comparison to the historical trend for similar programs.
And one more finding I wanted to ask you about is that the big five defense contractors have seen their percentage of contract spending drop a lot, but yet you say they'll be okay corporately. Does that mean the dollars are pretty much the same and everyone else, the small guys, are picking up the slack?
Yeah, and where they're specifically losing share is on the research and development side. So when you look at their revenues as a whole, they're doing okay and their market shares is okay, but it's shifting. They're less of their revenue is coming from developing the next generation of weapon systems. That means a lot more of it is coming from producing the current systems that are in production, again, F-35 being an example, and the other piece is doing services. So, you know, providing maintenance on C-17s if you're Boeing, or providing maintenance on other aircraft if you're Lockheed. That's becoming an increasing share of their market. Doing okay overall, but particularly on research and development, that's where the shift has really been profound.
Andrew Hunter is director of the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.